Right. Thank you so much for all of your comments that have been coming in so far this morning. John in Carrigart, not all people are racist to the travelling community. Is there a risk that they too show racism by default by thinking we're all racist towards them? I don't know. And I suppose we could argue the toss backwards and forwards. But really, we have to find a way forward. Both Pamela and Anne are inspirational and great for speaking, not just for the travelling community, but for every community. A big congratulations and well done from Margaret McAteer. And on it goes. Greg, give them ladies a slot in Highland. Excellent talkers, and no doubt they'll give the listeners in Radioland plenty of food for thought, and maybe at the same time change stubborn mindsets. Keep going, ladies. You're fantastic. That comes in from Gary there. Right, now we're joined on the programme by former Taoiseach, Minister for Justice and Attorney General Michael McDougall. Good morning to you, Senator. Thank you so much for joining us. I do appreciate your time today.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you.
Right. OK, so I suppose privately and amongst your friends and what have you, you could have sort of gone, right, I'm going no-no with these two referenda. Why did you feel it important to use, I suppose, your platform to come out so strongly in favour of a no-no?
Well, I believe that the two proposed referendums are going to be seriously damaging to Irish society in two different ways, and I'll explain them to you later. And I believe that, you know, what happened in the Dáil and Seanad was disgraceful. They were rammed through in three-hour debates, and the government, which said before it started this process that it was going to be open to amendments, it put down motions which are called guillotine motions, which effectively prevented any discussion of any amendments to their proposed wording. And these two amendments, the 39th and the 40th amendments, are going to have very serious effects in the future for Irish society and for the legal rights of Irish citizens. And, you know, it's about time that the other side of the story was explained to people. I believe that, and it's my experience in Dublin, and I don't know whether it would be your view of Donegal, but the vast majority of people who are left in a state of complete confusion, they don't know what the purpose of these referendums is, and that hasn't been properly explained to them. They've had vague signs put up saying, vote yes, family and care. They don't know what is exactly being proposed, and they don't know the very serious damage that acceptance of these amendments will make.
Yeah, and I think from my perspective, we didn't just try, we actually did have a debate. But because there are two, as much as I tried to sort of say, right, let's deal with the family amendment first and then the carer second, there was a crossover. And it can be really difficult with the best will in the world to actually articulate because they're both being jumbled in, and even the greatest minds I've heard confuse one with the other. So what is, can I just ask before we get into it, if these had been worded better or more satisfactory to you, or with certain amendments or clarifications, could you have quite easily been swayed to a yes, yes, without getting into the nuts and bolts of that? Is this about the wording or the vagueness of it? Or
no, it goes deeper than that, Greg. Obviously, the failure of the government to accept amendments to the wording has worsened the situation considerably. But I mean, at the heart of the 39th Amendment is a proposal that that families in future, for constitutional purposes, will be relationships either based on matrimony or other durable relationships. But when it came to the Oireachtas, we said, well, let us decide what the durable relationships that will or will not amount to a family in future by law. And the government said, no, we're leaving it to the courts. And one of the problems with that, Greg, is that the courts only decide cases that come before them. And that's where there are disputes between parties. People don't go into court and get consent orders. And what you're faced with here is that the meaning of the term other durable relationships falls now, if these referendum proposals are accepted, to be decided in hard-fought cases between people who are or are not affected by
but
them.
But, Senator, is it not clear, really, that a durable relationship is, you know, a long-lasting, committed relationship? Are we not really kind of have that already established?
You might think that, but curiously, the chair of the referendum commission and indeed Minister Roderick O'Gorman said that the duration of the relationship is not the feature; it's the nature of the relationship. And therefore, if two people get, I mean, for instance, in one case, they're suggesting that a mother and her single child will be a durable relationship. And that's easy to understand. But if two people get together at the moment and they are living together, cohabiting together, they may or may not, in the end, have rights against each other under the 2010 cohabitants legislation. And they can opt out of that. If they wish to, they can opt out of having any obligations towards each other under Section 202 of that Act. But if you say, durable relations it now gives rise to family status and family obligations, that will no longer be the case. You won't be able to opt out of important things such as each of the parties to the relationship share in each other's property if it breaks up. To take a simple, maybe an emotional example, a farmer having a relationship with somebody does or does not.
What about just in relation to that? Say, for instance, I'm currently in a durable relationship and either partner has an affair, and that affair lasts for 3 or 4 years or whatever it might be. Yeah. Maybe there could be the other person involved might have a couple of children, and they might only see them weekends, but all intents and purposes, that is, could be seen as a durable relationship. Does this create a scenario whereby an individual theoretically could be in two durable relationships, and those two durable relationships could be tested as to which is the most durable or which is the actual durable?
But that's the whole point. If you're going to say that a man could be, for instance, in two of those durable relationships at the same time, then you ask yourself, is it possible to be a partner in two families at the same time? And can you have obligations under the Constitution and rights under the Constitution as a male partner, say, in two families at the same time? All of this has been left up in the air.
And when does that family cease? Is it replaced by another? Or okay, I don't want to sound like I'm arguing for I'm simply asking questions that aren't answered.
You're asking very fair questions, Greg. I mean, for instance, if I and a woman get married, at the moment, and this will continue to be the case, we can only end our marriage by going to court and getting a divorce. And the Constitution says that we must get a court order, and the court is prohibited from giving us a divorce unless both of us are properly provided for and any of our dependent children are properly provided for. But in, quote, other durable relationships, unquote, there is no exit mechanism except somebody walking out the door or somebody dying. If they break down, there is no way of going to court to say this relationship has broken down. And I mentioned earlier, that cases are only decided in courts where there's a dispute. Who will be the parties to such disputes? Will say some women want to claim that they are a family and are entitled to family rights against the wishes of their cohabitant male partner or vice versa? Under the existing law in relation to cohabitants, most people don't know this, by the way, but since 2010, cohabitants have to be two adults in a committed and intimate relationship. That's what the Eratus provides. And then it goes on to say that qualified cohabitants means cohabitants who've been living together for 5 years and or alternatively cohabitants who've been living together for 2 years and have had a child. Now, that's not the basis on which the new phrase has been put into the Constitution. Durable relationship has no constitutional meaning like it does under the 2010 Act.
So, Senator, what is a family then? So if a durable relationship is formed and say the man in this case enters the life of the woman and she's got two children.
Yeah.
What is the relationship between that man and those children as a durable relationship? If durable relationship means family or is interchangeable or there's a crossover, like, and then if they exit that, however you might exit that durable relationship, because there's no real way to sort of determine that. I'm just curious as to, you know, in terms of family law and all that type of stuff and rights and access and stuff, like, does that mean that if two people get together and there's a blended family or whatever it might be, what is the responsibility or relationship between the adults and the children, and particularly the children of the other partner, in that going forward, and when does it cease?
Well, that's the whole question, and that's why the Lawyers for No group, by the way, are launching a very detailed document analysing those precise issues. I mean, for instance, if there's a single mother with a child or two children and a man moves in with her, if she's regarded as a family under the new arrangement, is there a second family or is it a different family when the man joins it and has a durable relationship of, say, 2 years with her? If he has a further child with her and then goes off and forms a durable relationship with a third party or gets married to a third party, what happens to the original family? Does it still exist? None of these issues are in any way provided for in the
Well, what happens now, though? What happens in that scenario you've just given? What is the scenario now? I mean, he is with someone else. It would be logical to say that, whether legally or not, that the first relationship has broken up. He's taken up with another person. And the first relationship then ceases, and the original family returns to the makeup of the mum and the child.
Well, I mean, for instance, at the moment, people can cohabit, and if you have a child by virtue of your cohabitation, you may be liable to provide maintenance for that child. You may, if you want have such an arrangement, agree with your cohabitant that you will or will not be liable to maintain the other party to the arrangement, but if it breaks up.
Senator, is it not always the case, though, and my word, never have we had a situation whereby one party in this call knows more than another, but, you know, we put the legislation in. It's not necessarily perfect. It's always potentially going to be open to challenge and interpretation. Is this not why we have our courts and why we have the Oireachtas, and we have very clever and intelligent people in both, to determine all of this through the process? So in other words, this recognises that families are different now, and people might say, why recognise it? We might return to more traditional families into the future. Let's not change the constitution. But it does account for the fact that we are a changed society. There's lots of different relationships out there. It recognises it. And it is the job of the Houses of the Oireachtas and the courts now to make sense of this all for us. And this is just the norm.
Well, I would agree with you that it's the job of the Oireachtas to decide these matters, but it isn't the job of the courts to make the fundamental law relating to cohabitation and to decide it in a series of case law decisions. And you know, that's precisely why in the Shannon we put forward an amendment saying leave it to us to decide what is or is not a durable relationship, and we can tweak that, change it. We can, when court decisions come which we're unhappy with, we can amend the law by simply passing a bill. But what's happening here is that if the matter is given completely to the courts to decide and the Oireachtas is given no function, courts will hand down judgments. And the only way to amend the law, so to speak, or to amend the outcome of those decisions will be to have a further referendum.
In relation to the, there's a couple of issues in relation to the second referendum. Firstly, in relation to the language, why would it be that we have it phrased in such a way that there's not an actual commitment on the state? We can try. And I mean, then that's open to real interpretation as to whether we try or not. And then why is care not more broad in it? Why is it the focus of this part of the constitution only for care within families? So in other words, the actual legislative care is in families, and in supporting that, the government is effectively seemingly saying into the future we'll try our best to support that, but, you know, strives very open-ended.
Well, the term strive, in fact, is deliberately put in there, as far as I can see, Greg, to ensure that nobody can go to court and say, help me, and get a court order saying, you must help me. in caring for another member of my family. But the care amendment has two fundamental functions. Number one, it takes out the existing Article 41(2) of the Constitution, which obliges the state to support the decisions of women who want to work in the home rather than be forced by economic necessity to work outside the home. And that has consequences. That existing wording, Greg, was the basis of the Murphy tax decision. And the Murphy tax decision was one where the Supreme Court said to the Oireachtas, you can't have income tax laws which discriminate unfairly against people who are married compared to people who are simply living together unmarried. So that's going to be taken out by the government. And it has consequences too, because there are a number of court decisions invoking that precise wording to say that when couples break up, the woman in the home who's parenting can't be obliged by her her former partner to work outside the home if he has the resources to keep the situation in existence whereby she can continue to parent within the home. That's being taken out, and those are valuable provisions. Instead of that, they're bringing in a very vague-minded strive to assist carers, family carers. But I mean, my colleague in the Shannon, Tom Clonan, is a veteran disability campaigner, and he's wholly opposed to this. And he says, you know, there are many, many carers, there are many, many people in need of care. For instance, people who need independent living supports by the state, to which in respect of which the family is utterly irrelevant. Either the family isn't in a position to help them, or they are not in a position to avail of family help. And as people get old, particularly with disability, and there aren't family carers for them for one reason or another, this particular amendment is of absolutely no use at all. It's being inserted, Greg, in the fundamental rights chapter of the Constitution, but it gives absolutely no enforceable rights to anybody at all.
Okay, but then it seems pretty useless. So is it not then at least an advantage that people like myself, who raised children on my own for a considerable amount of time, that I'm recognised equally, that I'm as important as a woman in the same position?
Well, the courts have said frequently that the reference to women in the home, and their work in the home in the Constitution is not to be interpreted as saying that men don't have duties and rights in respect of the same kind. Mm-hmm. They were saying that this was a special protection for women, and it is a special protection for women because I don't know about your personal situation, Greg, but the vast majority of parenting obligations are discharged to a larger degree by women.
No, for sure. I don't disagree with you in that. Just in relation to this, sometimes we get on things, words and phrases that I think is a bit of a distraction, and I'm not sure what your views are on a bit. Like, I'm hearing an argument about, you know, a woman's place is in the home. It's not even in the Constitution.
Yeah.
But I mean, that was just effectively how some people perceived this part of the Constitution, and then it became just normal, familiar language. I don't think anyone truly believed that a woman's place is in the home is in the Constitution. Do you think it's a distraction arguing about that, though?
Ministers keep using this phrase.
Yes, but it's
this is to remove the language that women's place is in the home.
Yeah, but we heard this long before
the Constitution
proposals.
Constitution never said that, as you've just pointed out, Greg. Okay. And it's a lie, effectively, to keep repeating that.
So you actually believe that phrase is being weaponized in favor to favor?
Yeah,
yes.
It's,
okay.
It's,
all right. That's
weaponizing a lie. And I mean, if you look at the Constitution, you'll find in Article 45 that there is a recognition of all citizens, men and women equally. This is the phrase it uses to go out and earn their livelihoods. and to provide for themselves in this way. So the suggestion that the Constitution confined women to the home is just a complete untruth.
But did this part of the Constitution, again, correct me if I'm wrong, was it not used to, and there's many people listening to this, who don't have a pension or a very much reduced pension because of this part of the Constitution?
No, the answer to that is no. And for instance, people are saying now, the marriage bar reflected this part of the Constitution to people working in the public service. That's another lie. The marriage bar existed from the 1880s right through the creation of an independent Irish state with its own constitution in 1922 and 1937 up to 1973. It was, this provision has nothing whatsoever to do with that. It was a most unfair discrimination, but it didn't arise in the constitution and wasn't justified by the terms of the constitution.
So finally, we heard from Sinn Féin that they will put these to the people again, even if it's a no. I'm not sure what the government's position is in relation to this. What is your position? Do you believe that these two parts of our constitution do need to be looked at? Or if it's a no-no, would you prefer to say just leave it alone and you've made the arguments as to why?
Yeah, I think the best, first of all, if you don't know, vote no. But going
ahead.
Yes,
but you know because it's so complex, Senator. Yeah, that really effectively saying, including myself, vote no, because we're not going to all know the
ins and outs of such a thing. I mean, Sinn Féin said that that they would re-amend this.
Yes.
But I mean, the Constitution isn't just a regulation or a statutory instrument or a statute. This is serious stuff. And if they don't agree with the wording, they should say no. And they should have opposed it in the Dáil, and they should have come up with their own wording, and they should have insisted on it, and they should have voted against the guillotine motion. They had all of these opportunities, but they didn't take them. And what we're faced with now is two amendments to the Constitution, which will do very serious damage. One to by loosening the definition of family to cover all sorts of situations which we don't know and which will be decided in the future by the courts. And secondly, to take out Article 41(2) of the Constitution, which has been used to invalidate discriminatory income tax acts, which has been used by the courts to ensure that women get a fair deal, women in the home get a fair deal in alimony and maintenance payments. And we're being asked to take these out just simply to put in place the so-called care referendum article, which in fact gives no rights to anybody.
Okay, Senator Michael McDougall, thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate
it. Thanks, Greg.
All right, take care of yourself. That's Senator Michael McDougall, who is, of course, the former Taoiseach, Minister for Justice and Attorney General. He's advocating a no-no. We've heard from people as well advocating a yes-yes. And we're trying to mix up two of the yes-nos and the no-yeses. But as I say, in the round, we are giving all views. So listen, keep listening to the show. We will have further debates where yes-no we're on together at the same time. But we've had an opportunity for a yes-yes on a couple of occasions to have their saying that's no-no there. And you know what? Debates are fine. But I think actually what I want to hear is conversations that are challenged, like, in relation to no, no, but also in relation to yes, yes. I think that's really helpful to have two people on at the same time arguing yes, no, yes, no. I'm not sure that I actually really in this show should be more of a fan of debates, but I think debates are entertaining. I'm often not sure how we're not shying away from debate, by the way. We'll have them. They're entertaining, but I'm not sure how informative they are. Right, okay. Thanks to Senator McDougall there. In relation to your voice, your community, your voice, Aquilus is very disappointed with that interview. You kept speaking about the problems they face, but never once asked any of them how they could improve our perception of them. Reconciliation is a two-way street. We had a conversation. Why should they always have to defend themselves? You know, it's about a better understanding of them as individuals, of a community. We're all the same, really, fundamentally. I'm not going to use an opportunity where, and we're going to do it over the next while. Of course, I'll challenge, but do you know, it's also good to focus on the good, which outweighs any bad in any section of society. You know, that's like saying if a settled person come on the show and talked about what they were doing, I would say, yeah, but I was, you know, I was in the, looked at the paper today and the first four pages were members of your community in courts, you know, because we, the general population doesn't, the settled population doesn't have to, if the white settled population doesn't have to deal with that. They're not challenged at every turn that there are bad apples. So I wanted to have an opportunity where we talked about positivity as well. Michael McGarvey's Director of Water and Environment with Donegal County Council with responsibility for the Private Enhanced Effective Blocks Grant Scheme. Michael, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
And we have the positive news. We had it flagged that it could have been the end of next week or the start of this week, but be that as it may, it is this week, the online portal for the Enhanced Effective Concrete Blocks Grant Scheme is now open.
Yeah, I'm delighted to say, Greg, and thanks for having us on here. Look, in the first instance, I suppose we'd acknowledge here the people affected, but that the various bit of homeowners in the first instance, you know, it's a lot of trauma and uncertainty people are going through. So it is something that hopefully that this will help them in their journey, and that's in the first instance, opposed to the homeowners' representative groups, the competent building professionals and their contractors, you know, the homeowners' liaison officers, the elected members, and also the department, so and as well as that, maybe the staff involved. So just want to acknowledge that in the first place. But we are
Before we go on to the portal, because I want to ask you specifically about that, but the council's defective concrete block grant office has been busy, perhaps not as busy as some might like, but quite a bit, quite an amount of payment claims have been processed to date.
Yeah, and I would say in the first instance, Greg, extremely busy, and I just want to acknowledge that first of all. And I know it's been frustrating for people. People talk about, you know, a vacuum in information. I suppose that's one of the reasons we want to get out there. We have a press release out today as well, and we'd hopefully do more of that, communicating and getting that clarity. But they have been extremely busy, and I'd say right up until Christmas and in the weeks since then, right through last weekend, I can see that the staff worked till 8 o'clock Friday, even right through Saturday and Sunday and the last number of days. So very busy. But I would say, just as you said there, yeah, and since the scheme opened, that we've 21 million processed for 112 applicants, and we continue to do that and will continue. What I would say as well, Greg, that the portal isn't just opening. The portal has been open, but that it's now available to more of the applicants out there. So that there's over 365 applicants out there now who will have access and see where they are in the process, the payment they've received, etc.
Right, talk to us about the function of this portal then. So presumably it's at a stage of the process that a homeowner is given access to this portal, because you talked of it being opened to a limited number that's now been expanded to over 350. So the portal becomes available to a victim of this crisis at what point on this journey through the scheme?
I suppose what I would say in the first instance, and we'd maybe there's good information available on the council's website. I would say in the first www.donegalco.ie, if people click on that, one of the first links that they'll see there is the Enhanced Effective Concrete Block Scheme. There's good information on there, so I'd suggest anybody who's even thinking of entering or has been on it, that's a very good source of information. And what people can do, if they're even thinking whether or not they want to register in the first instance, they can go on there. And they can actually, the homeowners themselves can register, and they get a username and a password. And after that, then they can get information on what's available, and any applications they submit, they can do it online through the portal, etc. And that's where they get messages back as to if there's further information or there's progress been made in their application.
All right. So, but what does the portal, what service does it provide, and at what point does someone get access to it?
Well, as I said there, that basically they can, if they have already registered, they can go on there and get access, further access to more people today. But people who haven't yet access, they can still register on there, as I said. So people can go onto the website, see how to go onto the portal,
so register. To be clear, I've got cracks in my house. I've got an engineer out. He's determined that it matches the criteria for it to be referred to be board, right? Have I access to the portal at that point?
Yeah, you can go on there. People can actually access in the first instance, go on and get the application form set. I would suggest if people, if they're just starting off, that they go to the www.donegal.co website. Go on there, they'll get the information, but they'll also get information there of how to register on the portal. They'll get information then on the application forms, the steps that they follow, etc. When they complete those, how to actually upload them onto the system, and when there's updates then provided through the process. This is going to be, you know, in some cases a long process through the different steps. When they fill out their application, when they engage their competent building professional, they actually provide the BCA, then the report, the assessment, which is then submitted back on through the portal. That's referred. When it's validated, it's referred to the housing agency. They'll then get word back again through the portal, get messages there at what stage, whether it's been approved or not approved for the meeting the minimum damage threshold, etc., and on so through the process.
In terms of, you know, receiving payments, you know, be it rental, storage, a stage payment as part of the construction process, that's all done through the portal, and is it done timely, if that's correct?
That's right, yeah. There's three parts, I suppose, in the updated system release includes for applications in respect. There's three elements of this ancillary grant on the online portal. Firstly, I suppose, there's the alternative accommodation where the relevant dwelling is no longer, you know, habitable or due to damage, or where the alternative accommodation is necessary during the carrying out the remediation work. And there was 15,000 available for homeowners for that first option. Secondly, then, the ancillary grant also provides for storage costs of up to 5,000 for the contents of their homes while the remediation works are ongoing. And lastly, where immediate emergency repairs were required to be completed, they can apply through the portal and through the system again. And that's the tune of 5,000.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of, say, for instance, an inquiry, so you know yourself, there's going to be certain scenarios, and we heard of one last week whereby someone had put a shed on the site and stored stuff in there, and they were wondering would the 5,000 cover the cost of the shed. I'm not asking you to respond to that individual case per se, but what I'm saying is that is there a human also that you can speak to if you need to appeal or clarify anything, you know, if something is a little bit sort of outside of the simple?
Yeah, and again, what I would say there, there's very good information available in the first instance on the website, and myself, I wasn't involved directly until a few months ago, and I was able to familiarise myself. I found it user-friendly. There's very good frequently asked questions sections there as well, but there's also on the system that for people want to submit queries, they can email in queries, they can put them in through the portal when they register, and we do try and respond. What we are trying to do is professionalize this as much as possible. We have a very dedicated team there. We have technical staff, we have the administrative staff, we have our information system staff, and between us there's a team there, and I suppose the focus has to be on trying to get information as accurately as possible and as quickly as possible to respond to the queries from the homeowners. You know, again, not just saying it, Greg, but the point there really is I want to get that across. That's where our focus mm-hmm. is and will be, and I suppose this system, yes, we'd like to have got some of this out sooner, but we're absolutely focused that we'll get the turnaround. So, Greg, to answer just your question again, emailing in the queries, going in through the portal in the first mm-hmm. instance, we're looking at as turnaround times as quickly as we can. Okay. But there's also information on the website of when there's staff available to talk to applicants mm-hmm. or the competent
building professionals. Well, that's what I was going to say. What do people do who maybe they have literacy issues, IT, they've got IT limitations, maybe they're older and can't do this process digitally. What support is there from the council for that group of people?
Well, there is a group, and I would say, look, at without a doubt, the council are there to help, but they will need to engage. If someone is concerned about their house or what they might do or what options, they do have to engage a competent building professional. Mm-hmm. They will be able to help them with a lot of the questions. And the first instance,
no, but I'm
think
on about
that's
uploading,
important.
I'm on about, say, you're doing that in terms of uploading to the portal, reading the writing that's there. Some might have an issue with. Some might not even be able to open the lid of a laptop. What support is there for that group of people from the council to process their applications? Are you saying they need to get third-party support, or is the council going to support them?
No, absolutely. The council is going to support them for sure. But I did say, and I think it's important to get that message across there, in the first instance, they still, not in the first instance, there's information available there. We are able to deal with queries. And like you said, there are a lot of people do use emails, etc. And those that don't, we have staff that are available. The hours that they're available, the days they're available are on the website.
Maybe my point's not being clear. There are people out there that can't access the internet, they can't read, they can't click the links. I'm looking at the page, it's incredibly detailed, but for them, that's gobbledygook. Is there any support for those people to say, look, I can't do this online, I even maybe struggle to read or what have you? Is there any support from the staff to support those people? Is there any support from the council to help them with the application process? Or do they have to seek third-party help?
No, Greg, and I'm sorry if I haven't got the point across correctly. I've already said there is, without a doubt, we have dedicated staff. We actually have telephone availability.
Okay.
There are dedicated, as well as that, Greg, what I would say, that there's actually dedicated homeless liaison officer available there, and they can be contacted, and they will sit with people, talk them through the process, and the council staff are available. Those details of when they're available, and they are on the website. So I'm sorry if I didn't get it across earlier, because that's
a very
important point.
I do understand. That's good. In terms of those who are out money for quite some time that they're entitled to refunds on, does that include the testing costs? There could be people out 6, 7, 8 grand waiting on that money, or it could be other money in to do with storage or temporary accommodation that they're waiting. Will this portal accelerate those refunds where people are entitled to them?
We have been able to, and without a doubt, and we've heard it on your show and others as well, there's people that would have liked this portal to be available earlier so they could actually claim through the portal, and that's obviously what we're talking about here today. We have been and have processed payments in the last number of weeks and months, and that's been ongoing. As I said, there's 21 million processed so far outside of this, but we are continuing to process payments. What I would say now, that people can claim through, once they're registered, once they've approved grant amounts, etc., that they can register and claim those ancillary costs, accommodation, the immediate emergency repairs and storage costs.
Oh, brilliant.
And there is a cohort of people out there who'd incurred engineers' expenses, quite considerable engineers' expenses, before they were approved under the old scheme. And I know that they are now being assessed through the new scheme by the housing agency, and that they, until they're approved, until their options approved, they have been able to recoup those costs. I do know that we're in engagement with the elected members, with the department, to see how that can be actually expedited, and that's something we're working hard with.
Brilliant.
The department on.
Okay, Michael, I look forward to, as you see fit or whatever, or in terms of inquiries, working with you to get as much information out there and support for families out there through this platform as well as the other platforms at the council's expense. So we look forward to that. I know you're very fresh into the relatively fresh into the position, Michael. So we look forward to working together for the benefit of the families and those on this scheme going forward. Our competition winners today, they're heading up to Fundamania. The answer correctly was Bala Buffet. Frankie Quinn out in Stranorlar. Just across the bridge, actually, was the answer. Well done. You've got a family pass to that amazing event running from the 1st to the 17th of March. And also Dennis O'Donnell out in Manor. Dennis, you are also taking your family for a fun day of entertainment. We've another set of passes to give away tomorrow. And I just want to mention, too, that John Breslin, he is the Don, I suppose. John Breslin, quite literally, is out and around the Northwest. He's coming live today from the Radisson Hotel for the Donegal ETB's 2024. for further education and training fair, which is really well worth going down to, you know, whether you are starting out in your career or maybe you want a change of career or to look at different options. It's all there in the one spot down at the Radisson Hotel. Stay tuned because John Bredesen's going to give you much more information in relation to that. Now, one of the highlights set for me last year was the whole process of the Community Hero, and particularly its culmination with our Community Hero being selected. That was for 2023. It is back for 2024. And heading that up is our head of sales here at Highland Radio, Sean Quinn. So it is officially being launched today, Community Hero 2024. So I suppose, Sean, from the get-go, for new listeners or those that this passed by, talk to me about the Community Hero 2024.
Yeah, so I suppose what we're doing, Greg, is we're trying to grow on what we did in 2023. We had a nightmare in that room, remember, trying to pick a winner, because there was so many entries that were so deserving. So what we tried to do is we looked at it and said, how can we go and how can we award multiple people for the things that they do in the community? And again, we've been very fortunate and we've got a generous listener who has donated some money towards this as well. And he's been very good to us over the last 12 months. And what he wanted to do also was to reward those people that are, they go beyond the call of duty. They make that extra call at night. They don't look at the clock. They are just part of the community to help people. So today what we're doing is we're asking people to nominate somebody that they feel goes beyond that call, who is part of the community. And what we'd love to do is we'd love to have 5 winners. And what we were going to do is we're going to give them €1,000 each to do what they want to do with it.
Could be a holiday, could be a tank of oil, could be whatever it might be.
Exactly. Now,
and this is not limited to, but this is to give an idea, people who work in the community tirelessly, could be tidy towns, could be carers, could be volunteers in any other area. They're going the extra mile. That person's jumping out to you in your mind now as you're listening. But don't be confined by the suggestions you've heard from me or for Sean. This is open to interpretation. People work in their communities in all different ways, Sean. But as I say, I think as you mould over the category, not the categories, but the suggestions there, and there are names hopping into my head that are worthy of a nomination. Yeah. And that 1,000 could be going towards their cause. It could just be going towards them. That's up to them. We're not worried about that. Or that's up to them. But this is about recognising 5 individuals right across our region here.
Yeah, and you know, it's a great opportunity to. It could be that somebody's using their own petrol money to go and visit people in the nighttime. There is every person has an opportunity to vote that for that person now, because there's 5 people that are going to be rewarded. And it's a nice thing to do in a nice time of year.
A public thanks, and the prize is a lovely bonus. But this is about recognising people.
Yeah, and we're going to make it really simple, because last year we got a lot of letters and we got emails and outlining why that person should win. We want that again this year. And in your words, why do you think they should win? And what we'll do is we have a panel of judges who will sit down, deliberate, and come up what we hope will be the best 5 that will.
And it's not a writing competition.
No, absolutely not.
So don't
not.
Worry about that. In as simple as you want, but as much detail is better as well, tell us why you want to nominate someone. As I say, it's not. We're not basing this, Sean, I'm correcting, I'm saying it's about the person and their qualities. Not how that's articulated. The more detail, the better, of course. But
yeah.
I don't want anyone to be put off thinking, I'm not a great... It's not about that. It's not a writing competition. It's about, in your own heartfelt words, why this person is special to you. 5 people will be honoured, and each of them then will also receive a gift of €1,000 each, thanks to a generous listener who wants to work with us in what we're doing and support what we're doing here as well. How do you go about nominating someone? So we've talked a little bit about how, you can write a letter, you can do an email. Yeah. Sean, take it.
Yeah, so if you want to do it via email, it's the email address is hero@highlandradio.com. Or if you want to write to us, and feel free to do that as well. It's Highland Radio, Mountaintop, Letterkenny, County Donegal. And that'll come to me. We obviously have to have a closing date for this. So it's the 18th of March is the closing date for entries. And what we'll do is we're going to try and do this pre-Easter if we can.
I don't know when Easter is.
It's
It's right.
It's the end of March.
I was going to say it's right against St. Patrick's Day.
Right at the end of March. Right. So we're going to try and do this. Now, what I'd love to do is we'd love to have a little bit of a secret element to this as well. So when you're nominating somebody, please give us your details as well. A phone number that what we can do is we can ring you, we can get more understanding of this person. And if they're lucky enough. Absolutely. If they're lucky enough, what we can do then is we can work with that person to try and give them a surprise of Easter. Mm. And you know, if somebody lands in and you're in a coffee shop or in your work and we'll have a check for €1,000, isn't that a lovely thing to do, isn't it?
And an Easter egg?
Well, we might throw an Easter egg in there too.
Some leftover shamrock.
You heard it live now. Greg is going to donate Easter eggs for everybody.
All right, yo. Okay, so listen, it really couldn't be any simpler. And the more we explain, we could be at risk of complicating it. Not you, Sean, me. It couldn't be simpler. You know that person in your life who works really hard in the community and for others. They go that extra mile, as Sean said, for neighbours and friends or for the community as a whole. Five of them will be selected and honoured as community heroes, and each will be gifted €1,000. If we can sort of jazz it up a little bit and surprise them all, well and good. So include who they are and also a little contact detail for you. The closing date's the 18th of March. We'd love to get it all done in the last week of March as well, because what a lovely way to head into that Easter break. More information at highlandradio.com.
Yeah.
But it's very simple. Email name, address and reason why and your contact details to hero@highlandradio.com. We'll post your nomination to Highland Radio Mountaintop Letterkenny, County Donegal. We'll get it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, Sean, thank you so very much indeed.
Pleasure.
We'll mention that again in the not too distant future, and we've loads of exciting wee things that we're going to be announcing over the next wee while, but I'm going to depart now. Thanks to Caroline and Shannon working on the show. Caroline researching and producing. We're back with you tomorrow morning at 9 with the Friday panel.